Hello, I'm Georgie Barrett.
And I'm Alex Goldstein.
And welcome to the Sleep Life podcast, the show from Simba designed to help you unlock your sleeping potential. Whether you have trouble getting your head down or are interested in boosting your performance, this podcast is all about realising that sleep is very much at the foundation of everything we do whilst we're awake. Firstly, Alex, I want to just say, why are we doing this podcast series? Why on earth is sleep so important?
So, I mean, people know Simba as a mattress brand. We're known for having done lots of research for our products. But in doing that, we uncover loads of really fascinating and interesting information about our sleep lives. And look, we've all heard some really scary numbers in the press, like one in four of us isn't getting a good enough night's sleep. We've even heard a number thrown out there that it's costing the economy £40 billion a year. Something seems to be getting in the middle of this incredibly natural process that we've been doing for thousands of years. And we think that's something worth talking about.
So what we're going to do is in each episode, we're going to be diving into different areas. So we're going to be looking at things like sleep and relationships and businesses, family and nutrition. And today we're going to be looking at how travel affects our sleep. We've all experienced things like jet lag, but Alex, why does travel mess with our sleep so much?
In short, what it does is confuse our inner biological clock. So we've got something known as the circadian rhythm. And if you're traveling long distances, crossing a lot of time zones, your body gets confused about things like light levels and doesn't really know how to manage production of hormones and neurotransmitters to actually tell us when to go to sleep. And it means that our circadian rhythm isn't lined up with what's also known as sleep pressure, which is another process that we have that tells us when we should be asleep.
Okay, so we're going to go into the science of all this a little bit more later.
We will.
But joining us is a guy that travels a lot for work, here to provide us with some anecdotal evidence from Joel and Nish versus the world to ITV's I'm a Celebrity Extra Camp. Welcome to comedian and TV presenter Joel Dommett. Hello, Joel.
Hello, how are you?
I'm good. I've got to ask you, how did you sleep last night?
Actually, pretty good last night. What a great question to ask someone when you first meet them.
I know.
So
I can
lovely.
See your eyes actually just like trying to remember what was in store.
It's so great. It's usually when people meet people, they go, oh, how are you? How was your day? And you went, how was your night?
How was your night indeed?
Actually, slept really well last night. I'm generally quite a good sleeper. It's actually a great podcast for me to be doing right now because the last 2 weeks I've been sleeping very badly.
Oh, really?
Tell you what it is. This is very boring. If I don't stretch correctly after being at the gym, if I don't roll out my back, then my back gives me problems.
Oh, that's...
So I just end up fidgeting a lot. But if I make sure
that... Can't quite get into the comfortable position.
Yes. Yeah. It's all about the position,
okay,
isn't
it? Is there a particular... Are you sort of a front sleeper, back sleeper?
I'm a front sleeper.
On
my belly with my right hand on my forehead like I'm sort of a lady
saluting.
In the 50s, sort of looking,
fainting.
Yeah.
Is that underneath the pillow then?
My right hand under the pillow, because yeah. If I put it on top of the pillow, it goes dead after a while.
Right.
I like to spread myself as widely as possible. Legs sort of fully wide.
Yeah.
And yeah, I really sort of claim my space.
Does your fiancé mind?
My fiancé really is.
She's...
This is also the problem with it. I have to have my head facing left, which is away from her. And it's no offence to her. She's a wonderful person. I love her dearly.
But she sometimes...
We had this conversation the other day. We're about to move house and... I was like saying, like, I really would love it if we could swap sides. Because then
that's
a
big deal, though. You've really got to discuss that, whether that's allowed.
So there was a Twitter thread this week where everyone was going nuts because somebody said they just swapped on occasion. Like they didn't have a side of the bed
and
they didn't know that this was pretty much insane.
That person's killed people. they've absolutely killed people.
Just, are there any stats around belly sleepers are the most rare sleepers? Is that right?
Yes. And I think the most common position is fetal position. So most of
sort
us
of
are
on
just,
the side.
Yeah, desperately trying to get back to being children. Whereas you've evolved to a whole new level of sleep.
You're an elite.
Sleep.
I'm an elite
But you've got
sleeper.
To remember to stretch. That's
yes.
That's clearly what you've
learned. It's very
learned.
Odd. You know, when you roll out after the gym and you have that rolling thing, you roll your back on it. Have to do that after the gym. Otherwise, I genuinely wake up every like 15 minutes.
It's good that you've made the connection though between the two because I think sometimes people don't and then think, oh, I wonder why I don't sleep.
Once I figured that out, I was like, oh my God, it's amazing.
So we're talking about sleep and travel. Do you take your roller with you when you're going abroad for work?
I do. I have a little one.
Do
a little
you?
Travel roller. I'm such a sad boy. You know, most you would have thought most comedians and sort of touring sort of people would be like, oh, let's take some drugs and alcohol.
I've just you get your little roller out.
My little roller out, and I don't drink. So I just take lots of H2O and a roller.
I mean, that sounds like you're quite good at this. Is there anything else that you have as your sort of sleep essentials when you're away?
I'm sure we'll get into this later, but when I go to Australia for I'm a Celebrity, so I've been there 3 years in a row now because I did the show and then I've done the extra show twice. And first year, I didn't really have too much of a problem. This year, just gone, I really had a problem sleeping. It's really difficult because when you arrive, you sort of slowly sort of slide into Australian time because you're there for a week before the show starts. And then the show starts and you're back on English time. So you've kind of got to slide into, you accidentally slide into Australia and then you've got to go straight back into it and present a live show for 21 days running.
So your schedule when you're on the show, you're up all night Australia time.
Yes. I wake up about 10 o'clock in the evening. Right. So I go to sleep about sort of 2 or 3 in the afternoon. And then I wake up at 10 in the evening and then we work right the way through till about sort of 11 o'clock in the morning. And then I try and go to sleep.
That sounds utterly exhausting, is it?
Yeah, it really is. Like people think that we're just having the best time, which we are having a great time. But it's a weird, you don't get to experience a full Australian day, which is a good thing because I'd be very sunburnt. All you need is half an hour and the Australian sun and I am fully ready to go. But then it's weird to sleep because, as you said, it may have something to do with the Arcadian rhythms. I don't know what that is, but I have to put sort of pillows around the curtains to make sure there's no light because it's just so odd going to sleep in the daytime when your brain knows it's the daytime.
Yeah, you can actually get special blinds, can't you, that you can take with you to like travel blinds.
Yeah. So you can get like blackout blinds. And in some ways, if light is a real issue, blackout blinds are kind of more effective at blocking out than curtains, which let light kind of leak at the corners, and so you don't have to create a kind of pillow fort.
I know some people do that if they have a little baby. They take out almost these travel blinds that completely black it out. But I mean, if you add this to your roller, I'm not sure what kind of vibe you're going to be giving off on set.
Security going through your bags, right. Being like,
do you find those little face masks help at all?
They kind of weird out. They weird out my head. I feel like someone's. Yeah, I can't wear stuff on my face.
I don't like them either. My husband relies on one, and I find it. They feel claustrophobic, but they do work for some people really, really well.
I also love this. I heard that you actually missed the rap show party.
Yes.
because you're too knackered.
Because that's the problem. It's like the rap party is at night. It's kind of weird to me. Then they expect you to get home at sort of 11 o'clock in the morning, and then you could go to sleep and then wake up and go to the party, but then it feels weird. So we kind of, because it was the last show, we were like, I'll just have some drinks by the pool. When we get back from work, which is like midday, you have some drinks by the pool, by which point then you're like, oh, it's the last day, we're having 3 drinks. And then I fell asleep and then slept through
the whole
of the
party. You were gonna.
Yeah, I woke up at like 3 in the morning. I was like, oh no, I've missed the rap party. I've completely missed that. But it's a very weird month.
It's a very strange month. How does it impact your work? Because, you know, just from presenting stuff, you're always having to, you know, memorise stuff, repeat stuff to camera. Surely that makes it quite difficult.
It's once your body's into the rhythm of it, it's fine. But that first week's really hard. So you just kind of, you know, it's live television is always difficult anyway. But it's presenting a live show. And I remember like just not sleeping on one of the, maybe it was like the first 3 nights, just couldn't sleep.
Oh, no.
3 nights in a row where I'd had like 2 hours sleep.
Do you get anxiety?
Not really, but I just really found like, I was just behind everything. You know, you just feel like you're one step. As a comic, you like to feel like you're sort of jumping on those moments and those punchlines and those things where I'd feel like I was about sort of half a second behind that. It's the equivalent. Whenever I'm on a show with Jimmy Carr, right, he is so quick. I feel like we come up with the same stuff as
you're
comic
just,
brain.
Just a minute later.
But I'm like, honestly, like half a second behind him. And he's so good. He's so, so funny. And that he's so good at it because you just go, oh, I would have. That's what I thought of. But he's so ahead of the game.
But lack of sleep does really make an impact on things like that.
It does. It does. So, I mean, a lot of people think about like the physical ramifications, like you're sort of wandering around feeling tired and feeling knackered and you feel a little bit slower on the uptake. And it kind of affects the output as well. So it affects your creative thinking, it kind of affects how well you get along with other people. you're more likely to be more impatient, a bit more hostile. So, and particularly in a live environment where you've got to react to things coming in very quickly, the chances of you kind of perceiving them as slightly more threatening, being a bit more defensive, are higher. So it takes that extra bit of effort to kind of just normal.
Does the crew ever get a bit snappy with each other?
I'll just go, oh yeah, I'm an absolute diva.
Oh, yeah, I can see it in your
eyes.
Oh
my God, you should. I'm like Gemma Collins. Me and Gemma Collins, the worst in the biz. That's what they say. It's a really interesting thing. I'm fascinated with gym stuff. I'm fascinated with it all. I'm not necessarily the best at it, but I'm fascinated by it. And it's the amount of athletes that it's how much they sleep is really important. Like if you really want to lift more, the amount of sleep you have is so much a part of that. Like is that true or is that?
No, that's absolutely true. So Simba's an official sleep partner for Saracens. So we do a fair amount of stuff with the guys there about kind of their own sleep training, the amount that they sleep and whether they nap and how they plan all of that. And what happens when they travel for matches and stuff like that.
They sometimes take their pillows with them when they travel.
They
all wear their rollers, their blinds.
Yeah.
They all wear sleep trackers as well, don't they?
Really?
So the trainers and can actually evaluate and see if they're getting enough.
Oh, that's good. And they can also follow them in case they're having the odd party.
Exactly. What time do you call this?
Yeah,
coming
exactly.
in at 3 a.m.? So tell us a little bit about your other programme that you work on, Joel and Nish versus the world. You have to travel a lot for that as well.
I
yes?
mean, it's
the
insane.
World.
It's literally
it?
The world. It's not versus Europe. It's amazing. We get to travel so far and wide. And the last series, we went to Japan twice in different episodes, didn't do them together. Went to Argentina, Peru, Tahiti, and we've been to Mongolia, China. It's just like so far and wide. It's amazing. And the things we get to do is insane. It's often you get to fly somewhere and then it's another day of travel once
yeah,
you fly
yeah,
to that
how,
country.
Do they give you rest days at all?
Not really. Again, it's another sort of budgetary thing in terms of television now.
Yeah.
It's like so tight. So it's like obviously a rest day would just cost a lot of money. And
yeah.
So we just kind of, I think it was China when we'd done another episode beforehand and we flew straight there and we got there at 2 o'clock in the morning and then we had to be up for like 6 o'clock in the morning for filming. It was just like,
utterly sleep deprived.
Yeah. And it's mad because you get somewhere and then you're straight into a mad sort of exercise or.
Do you find it hard to be funny in that moment?
It is quite hard, actually. It's quite.
Especially if in your brain you're just like, humph,
yeah,
humph the whole
yeah.
time. That's what I always feel like.
It's like yeah, it's quite an odd thing, isn't it? You sort of try and sort of turn it on. And it's quite nice for me because I've got Nish there. So if ever I'm not funny, I like to think that he picks it up and
yeah,
I'm the same.
Bounce.
But it's nice having someone else there when, I did the 32-mile marathon in Mexico in the middle of the hills.
Wow.
And it was just like, oh my God, it was the worst. And we're often sleeping in these places that are, it's mad to you. And this is what I find fascinating as well. What we're used to in terms of sleeping is so luxurious compared to the rest of the world. And something you don't really think about. You assume kind of everyone's sleeping on a Simba mattress, just like you. But it's like you go to one of the first episodes we did was, well, the Tarahumara in Mexico, for instance, and they're in the middle of nowhere, they just live in these like tiny little huts just like on the floor, and they're completely fine with that. It's amazing how the percentage of people we go and visit who live, they just sleep on the floor.
Wow.
And they're completely fine with that. And I'll often just have like a little thing on the floor, like a sort of sleeping bag and... In Mongolia, we went to, they sort of had these wonderful little sort of huts, which are not called yurts there. They're called something else, I can't remember. But they get annoyed that people call them yurts.
Sure.
And so there it's very cold. So it's about keeping warm. It's not necessarily about being comfortable. Yeah.
And then you turn up, roller.
Your
little blinds.
Come on, I black out these windows.
Exactly, yeah. Alex, tell us a little bit about the science behind some of all this, because there's lots of different stuff going on when we're travelling to different time zones.
Yes. So essentially, in a normal day, when we're kind of going about our normal schedule, we've got two sleep processes going on at the same time. So one is just like the sometimes known as sleep pressure, which is just you're getting more and more tired through the day and you're releasing a neurotransmitter called adenosine.
So that builds up throughout the day.
That's right.
And it sort of reaches the peak after about 12, 16 hours.
Yeah, so it's around sort of 9 p.m. in a normal kind of cycle. And then at the same time, you've got the circadian rhythm, which sounds very fancy, but it's basically your body clock, which runs around 24 hours, maybe just a little bit longer. And that is really calibrated by exposure to light. you know, I'll be awake now. And then as the light starts to dim, it tells your brain to release melatonin, which is a hormone that sort of starts to advise your body that you should be getting ready for sleep and you should be, it's time to go to bed. And in an ideal world, you want that to hit its peak at the same time that the sleep pressure process hits its peak, and then everything's great and you go to sleep and you have a great night's sleep. When you're traveling,
yes,
that's not happening. The circadian rhythm is completely out of whack. Your light exposure is completely all over the place because maybe you left while it was light and it's still light where you are, and you've got to now get through another 6 hours before it's going to start getting dark again. And so that's where the processes start getting kind of misaligned.
So what was really fascinating was when I was in the jungle, because they completely strip everything away. And so it's the best I've ever slept in my entire life.
Oh, interesting.
And I think the best I will ever sleep in my entire life. I find it really difficult. When the producers asked me whether I wanted to be on it, I said to them that was like, the big thing I'm worried about is sleeping, because I find it really difficult to sleep around people. I find it really difficult to sleep when anyone is snoring. Like if I hear someone snoring in the distance, I find it really difficult. And Nish is a snorer, so I find it really hard to sleep. And we're often sort of bunked together in these little things, as I have to take earplugs and things. But in the jungle, first of all, you've got no coffee, you've got no sugar in your diet, you have no watches. And so you are, I feel like, is it?
Yes.
That rhythm is like the most...
circadian rhythm.
Yeah, circadian rhythm is
calibrated to just go with what's happening around you.
It's so fascinating. I would literally like be in my hammock, I'd close my eyes and I'd open them again, it was the morning. Like
oh,
it was
wow.
the most insane sleep I've ever had for 21 days. It was amazing. But you also, because as soon as the light starts to go, because you're not having anything like coffee or anything to keep you awake, we would often just be all just asleep. And there was once I remember we all went to sleep. We went to sleep. As soon as you eat, you're just like, you crash.
Yeah.
And the voice, this tannoy comes over, just like, just want to let you all guys know, it's really early.
So they were like, excuse me, we've got to get some content
yes,
out of you guys.
That's exactly
Stop
it.
Stop sleeping on the job and get back up again.
Honestly, that is it. It's so much of their time just waking us up.
The other thing that you don't have there is you didn't have artificial light and you don't have screens. So you're not looking into blue light for hours after you would usually start to power down.
Because that also impacts the amount of melatonin you're producing as well.
So blue light, which is a kind of part of the spectrum of light that you get from kind of like phones and screens and laptops and TVs, tends to interfere or slow down with that melatonin production.
And I've had melatonin in a tablet form to help me sleep. I think you can get it in America, but you can't get it here.
Yeah, it's licensed here, so you can get it on prescription.
But and it basically, I feel like it's better than a sleeping tablet, just because it makes you just feel a bit, doesn't make you whack you out as quickly. Is that true? Should I be taking it? Should I not be taking it? What's the vibes?
Obviously, it's one of those things where, you know, your doctor might advise you to take it in certain circumstances. The studies that people have looked at seem to indicate that it's most useful for dealing with jet lag.
Yeah.
Because it doesn't, the crucial thing with melatonin is it doesn't actually affect your quality of sleep.
Mm.
And it's not really the thing that makes you go to sleep. It's the thing that sends the signals to your body that it's time.
Yes.
And so when you're out of whack with your normal schedule, that could be really useful to just trigger that reaction in your body to go, all right, okay, it's time now. But if you're in a normal schedule and you're having trouble sleeping, it may not help actually keep
you asleep.
Yeah.
But it is useful for jet lag.
Okay, yeah. That's when I've only ever used it before, really, is for that stuff.
Have you got any other tips that you try and do to combat jet lag? You said you suffered from it when you went over to Australia.
I was finding it really, really hard to sleep. And so I took melatonin and then just try and deal with it that way.
Do you try and exercise at all or anything?
I have to. That's something I have to just...
Just for your mental well-being.
Because my life doesn't really involve a schedule. So if that sort of working out keeps me on a sort of slight routine. But I do find it much easier to sleep if I've done some sort of exercise. I also found the Headspace app. I got that and that helped me through it quite well.
Just to help you drift off.
Yeah, totally. Those are my sort of three things. If I'm really struggling, then I'll always pop that app on.
How do you sleep on flights? Are you quite good at doing
that? I sleep amazing on flights.
Do you?
Yeah. So like, really do. Like, I love sleeping on flights.
Is that something to do with the white noise? Is that...
I mean, some people find that white noise can be really good for getting sleep, particularly if you sleep somewhere where you're kind of prone to being interrupted by sudden noises. Mm. So maybe like traffic noises and things like that. White noise can just equalize stuff so that you don't hear the sort of peaks and troughs in noise.
Oh, really?
So that could be helping you.
Because they have those like YouTube videos of that have like
ASMR.
Yes, exactly. They have like a hairdryer, like an hour of a hairdryer noise, or like a Hoover
going for
like, yeah. It's so interesting, all that stuff.
I actually know somebody who sleeps with a hairdryer on.
Really?
Yeah.
They will burn down their house.
I know, and they do. They don't actually burn it down, but they go through hairdryers quite quickly,
as you
can imagine.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. Goodness. Alex, are there any other sort of big tips for combating jet lag?
So one of the kind of common themes that comes up across a lot of the advice is to start thinking about your destination timing. Now, obviously, that's quite tricky if you don't know you're travelling until a day or two before. But if you've got a bit of advance warning, you've booked a holiday, you know the business trip is coming up in a month. If you can, if you have control over your schedule and you can start adjusting your bedtime slightly earlier from a couple of weeks out, that can help.
I mean, that sounds an ambitious ask.
Yeah, it's ambitious.
Would you ever do that?
I would absolutely. I don't know what I'm doing tomorrow, so I mean that would be.
I'm just on sleep trading for my new schedule in 2 weeks' time.
If anyone's listening to this and they're able to do that, I mean that you are an incredible human. Imagine if you could be that organised. Sorry, I'm going to Japan in a couple of weeks. So I've got to go to bed early.
but what are the rules about sort of changing a watch? Should you do it as soon as you get on the flight and then be in the new time?
That's a really good idea. So if you're already thinking in terms of the landing, so you're on a really long flight, say you're on that flight to Japan and it's like 10, 12 hours and you're a couple of hours in, it's already bedtime in Japan, just turn off the screens, put like an eye mask on if you can cope with them, earplugs in, and just try and get an app if you can, because it'll just serve you so much better when you land.
Yeah, I think this is part of the problem now. Flights have such good entertainment.
I know, and you know, free glass of wine.
Yeah, yeah.
I sometimes have a lovely, and also, you know, what's really nice is that you're not connected, so you actually have a bit of time off from sort of having to be on call for various people.
But often now they're starting to have Wi-Fi and stuff, which is like
I haven't yet had a plane which actually had Wi-Fi that worked.
Even if I do have it, I quite like the idea of just being like, I'm on a flight. People know I'm on a flight. There's no info. It's going to get to me. Just this, you know, proper zone out. It's great.
Tweet something really terrible just before you
just
get
before.
On. And just wait, wait, yeah, and see yeah, what yes. happens when you get to the
other. Terrible stuff.
What about eating and drinking on flights, Alex?
So again, you probably want to think about the destination. So you might, if you've had caffeine to wake up for a really early morning flight, but you know that when you're arriving, you're going to have to keep going for a bit, just try and sync up your caffeine intake so that you're not drinking it right when you know, you get off the plane. It's like, oh, I've got to go to bed now, but I've just had a coffee and I'm really wired.
Yeah.
And the same thing with kind of sugar intake and all those kinds of things. Just try and regulate your meals a bit so that you're roughly in sync with where you're going.
Should we just not drink caffeine?
In general, the advice is try and stave off caffeine after 2 p.m.
Okay, yeah.
Because then you're giving yourself enough time to work out whatever you've had in the morning out of your system before it's actually time to power down.
It's also genetics that plays a big role in how quickly you process caffeine. So you know how some people can just have a coffee and still go to sleep?
Yeah. Italians, mainly. Yeah, exactly.
Indeed. Are you quite sensitive to caffeine?
I was. I feel like I'm getting better at it now. But
practice.
Yeah, practice makes perfect. But I used to be like wired, super wired. I used to not be able to have a cup of coffee before I went on stage because it's mad. It wouldn't. The stuff would just come out of my mouth straight from my eyes. Do you know what I mean? I would wouldn't go through my brain and think of something funny to say before coming to my mouth. Honestly, I would just like look at stuff and I'd be like, a lamp, a chair, a woman with glasses on. Oh, look, a light, a microphone. And I'd be like, what am I? I'm just saying everything that I say. This is the most unfunny thing I've ever done in my life.
So in your case, maybe no caffeine.
No caffeine, no, yeah.
But you can have a tactical coffee if you're jet lagged.
Yeah, and in fact, if you know that you've got to stay awake for many, many hours at the other end and you haven't timed your landing and you think, oh God, I'm going to have to try and power through a whole day on like 4 hours sleep, then I don't think anyone's going to grab the coffee out of your hand.
Yeah. Speaking about when's it good to land and when's it not good to land?
Yes.
Do you want to be landing when it's going in tonight or landing first thing in the morning?
That's a good question.
So one of the studies that we looked at kind of around jet lag was there was one of British sports teams. It was athletes and their kind of supporting team going from the UK to Australia for competition. So obviously their thing was like, you've got to be on your game. You've got to be really on top form when you land. And they looked at everything. They looked at health, general health, physical fitness, because there was also people who weren't athletes, age, sex, all those things. And actually the crucial takeout was, if you can really make that gap between landing and going to bed short, you will be better off the next day.
Okay.
So if you arrive in the evening and you can just go straight to bed, you've timed it so that you're going to be pretty tired at that point, then the next day you're more likely to be on top of your game.
So part of me, it's so fascinating because part of me really enjoys jet lag.
Really?
Like, I love it because, yeah, it's annoying when you're waking up at sort of 5 in the morning, 4 in the morning, really bolt upright, because the jet lag awake is the most awake.
It is the most awake you'll ever be.
And I wake up so well. When I go to Australia for like comedy festivals and stuff, I was getting up at like 5 in the morning and just like bolt upright, so awake. And I would just get so much done in that like 3 hours before everyone else was awake. It's more than I would ever do in a day back home. Like,
yeah, focused work, yeah, whilst everyone else is asleep.
I feel like I'm so much more focused when I'm jet lagged.
I mean, there is some, there's like some scientific truth in that. So one of the people that we've spoken to at Simba, but one of the sleep specialists we spoke to, is Alex Soojun Kim Pang, who's written a book about rest. And he talks about his schedule being like, he's had to kind of train himself to be a morning person because he can do more in those 3 hours in the morning, yeah, than he will ever be able to achieve for the rest of the day. And so he builds in naps later in the day so that he can create a structure where it's okay to be a morning person. You do have to go to bed a bit earlier as well, but that's
you
part
sort of
the
have
price.
This focus period of work, yeah, like a golden hour of just pure concentration. And if you can milk that, then you get so much more done in your day. Clever.
The golden hour.
Alex, what about sort of manipulating light when it comes to combating jet lag?
Yeah, so genuinely, some studies have looked into like light therapy, which is where you use artificial light to make up what you can't see. So if you know that you need to stay awake for a bit longer, you can use a lamp, or, you know, if you do have the opportunity to go outside and there's natural light, yes, that's the best thing. But if you can find like a full spectrum lamp or visor or something like that to expose yourself to keep yourself awake, and then manage to get into darker, dimmer, kind of a warmer environment. So that's when you want to switch to like yellow and red and amber hues. And well, very mood lighting.
I've actually tried some of these fetching glasses on the Gadget Show, where they're literally like sort of glasses that shine lights into your eyes. They look most bizarre. And I always feels a little bit like it's a fad and it's not going to do anything. But I feel like I haven't used it long enough to actually be able to say whether it works or not.
And I mean, I think it's going to have such different effects in a really extreme situation like jet lag, where you are just trying to adjust very rapidly to crossing several time zones at once, than if you did it as on a general basis, just first thing in the morning, gonna expose just myself to some light. Just open the curtain. Yeah. It's like, yeah, that's fine. That'll be the best light exposure you could get.
Yeah. So when you arrive at destination, to actually just seek the sun and sort of be in it would genuinely make a bit of a difference.
If you need to stay awake, be in as much light as you can. And then when you know you need to power down, try and shut that out.
Yeah.
Do you find that you get more jet lagged if you're traveling to somewhere like Japan, if you're traveling east or if you're traveling west?
Yeah, which is the way I get really jet lagged. I get jet lagged if I come back from America.
Yeah, so that's eastward.
Yeah.
That is what most people find. Is that right, Alex?
It's a thing, and it's to do with, it's so much easier to stay awake for a bit longer and like miss your bedtime and go to bed a bit late than it is to bring the day shorter and be like, I'm not tired yet, but I have to go to bed right now. So when you travel east, you're kind of moving forward in time, effectively cutting your day short, as opposed to like the other kind of time travel, which is a bit easier to deal with.
What I'm discovering from talking about jet lag so much is that I absolutely love it.
we haven't put you off it. You're not wanting to
Here's
fix
how
it.
To create more jet lag.
Exactly. We're trying to give you top tips on to get rid of jet lag.
And I'm going to do just the opposite.
Just, exactly.
Sleep deprivation is bad, just to be clear.
I'll just spend my life on a plane. It's like that. The being awake in the morning is amazing from jet lag, but also the sleep that you do get when you get that jet lag sleep, and it's the deepest sleep you'll ever have in your life. Like that jet lag nap that you have, and you're like, I'm just going to have an hour nap.
Do you not feel so groggy though?
And you just like, it's so incredible because you wake up on the sofa and you're like, oh, where am I? What year is it? Where am I? Who's the president? Like, it's the most insane deep sleep. I love it. It's so incredible.
Do you find that you get more jet lag the older you're in your 30s now, Joel?
33,
Joel?
Yeah. Oh, 33. Yeah. I know.
Do you feel the effects a little bit more?
I don't know. I don't feel like I feel it more than I used to, really. Is it something that does get worse as you get older?
Some studies seem to show that you kind of experience more sleep disturbance and you feel a bit worse about jet lag as you get older. But again, that athlete study did find that some of the older travellers were maybe better able to pace themselves. So I think if you're sensible about sleep and, you know, you've got your roller and your blinds and all the rest of it, if you do approach it as something that you prioritise, you may be able to kind of combat any kind of growing ill effects to some extent.
So Joel was speaking about having naps. Are naps suggested when you're jet lagged or just generally?
Sleep experts divide opinion on naps. Some really love them. Some caution against them. Some say you should do the whole sleep cycle of 90 minutes. Others are like, nope, 20-minute power nap. I think in general, as long as you don't nap too late in the day so that you eat into your kind of proper full-on sleep time through the night, then if that's the best way to manage being able to sleep at the right times, then give it a try.
Yeah. Do you ever get to do like sort of little siestas when you're filming or anything?
I have the ability, even though actually on my Netflix special I said I can't sleep on flights, just so I could talk about an anecdote about me not being able to sleep on a flight. But
regale us with this anecdote.
Well, basically I tell a whole story and about me not being able to sleep on a flight and everyone else being able to sleep and me climbing over the person next to me to get to the toilet. And
they wake up when you're sort of halfway through
that's essentially
the process?
Yeah, okay. So I'm essentially over them, completely over them, whilst they wake up and mid-flight and I'm just stood above them.
Frozen.
And I just go, shh, and then go sit back down. It's very weird. I can sleep. I love a good nap. My parents, when I was growing up, I had terrible problems sleeping. I couldn't sleep anywhere that was my bed. I couldn't sleep at friends' houses.
You're a delicate soul.
A delicate little flower. And then I found sleeping on my front. And oh my God. I couldn't sleep anywhere. And so they used to drive me around the block. They used to, I think, put me in the car and drive me around the block. And then I'd be asleep in the car and then put me to bed. And so now if I'm in the back of a car, I'll just sleep.
So you're good. You're good at just, you can be on a commute, you can be driving somewhere. Yeah. You're that annoying person.
I'm that person asleep on the tube.
Are you?
Yeah. And so also if I see anyone else asleep on a train and it's at this final destination, I feel like I'm a real good human being.
What
just going
say?
Up and wake them up.
By the way,
it's the final stop. And I had one this week where I woke up this lady. And, you know, I like to obviously do it in a delicate fashion. I don't want to sort of
startle them. You don't want to be crouched one over them. Frozen, going,
exactly.
Shh.
And I woke her up and she like went crazy. I was like, sorry, it's the last time. She was like, ah! I was like, it's your last time. She was like, thank you so much. I'm so sorry. I shouted at you.
Alex, is there anything else that when it comes to being in a hotel room that's quite interesting about when you're travelling, about not being able to sleep properly? Because I certainly get this thing when I'm in a hotel room where I still sort of feel like slightly awake. I just don't sleep as deeply as when I'm in my own bed.
No, you can get a sort of first night syndrome where your brain doesn't want to completely shut down because it's just like, where am I? What is this? Why is everything different? Why does everything sound different, smell different? So if you can find a way to kind of take some home comforts with you, be it a roller, a pillow, whatever it is, and kind of create an environment that feels comfortable, it will help. But I mean,
does it help just literally to tell your brain that it's okay?
Yeah, it's just that familiarity of routine, because your brain really likes routine when it comes to sleep. It likes going to bed at the same time and waking up at the same time, which is why you get all this advice in the news going like, don't try to make up sleep at weekends, kids, because actually your brain really likes just doing the same thing over and over again. So if you can create an environment that feels familiar, I think it will help relax you. You'll get less anxiety around going to sleep. You'll be able to kind of turn off some of those things. But it is normal. Everybody feels it. The first night in a hotel room is odd.
Yeah. When you're travelling a lot, do you sort of wake up and you actually don't know where you are?
Yeah, kind of. I just quite like sleeping in hotels. I sleep quite well in hotels, but I think it's just kind of because I'm a bit used to it. I definitely spend at least one night a week in a hotel. Obviously, when I'm touring and stuff, it would be more like sort of four or five, really. And when I'm filming Joel and Ish, it's constantly for 2 months. So I feel like I'm quite used to it, really. And usually when I am, it's because I'm working and I'm tired from working, so I sleep pretty good.
Do you have any routines when you get into your hotel room? I always take the duvet out of...
Really?
Yeah, just because I always find them too hot. That's what I always do when I go into a hotel
room. First of all, I mean, you have to untuck the duvet, which takes
yes,
absolutely... It's so tightly
tucked.
You've
got to touch that gross bit on top
as
well.
Why do they bother with a throw? Why do they
bother? It never gets washed, does it?
Take the throw. Don't bother with the throw. If anyone's listening who sets up hotels, don't bother with the throw. Secondly, I want to plug by the bed. I want to plug by the bed. Like, what? I'm not. Come on, it's 2019. I don't have to plug my phone in over by the cupboard.
But it is good for the alarm because it just forces you to get out of bed.
It does force you to get up. Also, can you please, the breakfast, I'm not getting up for breakfast if it finishes at 9. Like, 10:30 minimum.
Really? That's quite late.
I do sleep, because if I'm in a hotel, I don't want to get up for 9.
Really? Have you not got things to do the next day?
If I'm not jet lagged, I'm not getting up for 9.
He's having a lie-in. So would you say you're more of a night owl?
Yes, definitely. I work way better at night. Like, when I wrote my book, I pretty much wrote the whole thing from the hours of 11 o'clock till 3 in the morning, really.
So that is down to your circadian rhythm, isn't it?
That's kind of down to your chronotype. So we fall into certain patterns which seem to be genetically coded, which kind of align with where our circadian rhythm operates. So you get early risers who are kind of an hour ahead of everybody else, but also need to go to bed earlier. And then you get more night owl types who kind of go to bed that little bit later, get up that little bit later. And just, you know, as long as it's not affecting your work. In fact, if you have a job that allows you to kind of work around your chronotype, it's pretty perfect, because you can really make the most of those times a day when you're really alert, and then have a bit of downtime when you're not quite with it.
I just, being a comic, you're out obviously late at night a lot. And so it's kind of perfect for me. So I've kind of allowed myself. I'm definitely more of a morning person than I used to be. I used to... It'd be a completely sort of get up at sort of 10 and then enjoy the day. But now I'm sort of definitely becoming an earlier person. I find myself I'm growing up. Honestly, I genuinely feel like I'm becoming my parents. I hear myself saying to other people, like, get up, enjoy the most of the day. You know, so it's like, no, I'm
becoming
my dad.
You're on some kind of American chat show.
Yes, exactly.
whilst doing this. We're coming towards the end of the podcast now. So I want to ask you, what's your worst sleep habit? Have you got one?
I really like having a drink of water before I go to bed, and I always get up for the toilet.
Yeah.
Always. And I know it's a habit because I've managed to get myself out of that habit. And sometimes I go and I don't even need to get, not much comes out. And I'm like, why did I bother? Because I stayed in bed.
Stay in bed.
And in my house, it's like a one-bed flat with like a mezzanine with like a spiral staircase. So I have to go down a spiral staircase to go to the toilet. And every night I go to the toilet and it's like big, like clang, 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 clang,
clang. I'm sure your fiancé's delighted.
And then it's like, do you turn on the light? Do you not? Because, you know, you want to turn on the light. Because then it really wakes you up.
Yeah.
But then if I don't turn on the light, I piss everywhere. And so it's like bad for both.
Yes. What I advise is maybe leave out the glass of water. You'll probably make it through the night.
I know. I really should try that. But I'm so parched.
So parched. And finally, what would you say is your biggest takeaway from learning about your sleep cycles today?
I've learnt that I absolutely love jet lag. Absolutely love it. I'm a better person on jet lag. I sleep better and I'm awake more when I am awake.
Brilliant.
I'm more awake when I'm awake and I'm more asleep when I'm asleep.
I'm so glad we've made you have this realisation. Joel, where can people find out about what you're up to next?
Just on my website. So it's joeldommer.com, on my Instagram. And I'm doing various bits and bobs. So go on there.
You're travelling around the world trying to encourage jet lag.
The world. Exactly. That's going to become my new mission.
Well, it sounds like you're already on it. Joel, thank you so much. It's been a pleasure having you on the show.
Thank you so much for having me. It's been genuinely interesting.
That's been really brilliant. Thank you so much.
I'm off to have a nap.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode of Sleep Life. Make sure you subscribe, and we'd also love it if you could rate or review this episode. Now, we talk a lot in this podcast about things you can do to change your day-to-day behaviour or sleep environment, all of which are really important. But one of the easiest things you can do is just making sure you're sleeping in a bedroom that's really set up to help you sleep better. And that's what Simba is all about. You can check out Simba's award-winning hybrid mattress at simbasleep.com, where you'll also be able to find the rest of Simba's range designed to solve common sleep problems. We'll also drop any offers in the show notes, so keep an eye out for that.
We'll be back in 2 weeks' time, but watch out for a special bonus episode dropping next week, a sleep story written by Claire Storrow, designed specifically to help you doze off. Until then, sweet dreams.